You couldn't ask for a prettier Sunday afternoon, Frank Morgan thought, as he guided Stormy down the trail from the ridge. It was a little hot, but not bad for Texas in the summer. Under the shade of those oak trees around the church, it would be very pleasant. Frank drew in a deep breath, feeling a slight twinge in the newly formed scar on his left side. It was an annoyance more than anything else, an annoyance and a delay. The delay is what made Frank think back to the doctor in Granbury that Reuben insisted that he go to.
Well, Mr. Morgan, you get pretty damned lucky here. The bullet ripped a furrow in the flesh without really penetrating. You lost a lot of blood, but it ain't life-threatening.
That's good news, Doc.
I do think you should take it easy here for a few days before pushing on to Weatherford. Don't want that thing to open up and start bleeding again.
It's not possible, Doc. I got someplace important to be. And I'm already short on time.
You should listen to the doc, Frank. You had me worried back there with all the blood and such.
Reuben, I appreciate your concern, but I've been shot before, and I'm guessing I'll get shot again. And believe me, this isn't all that bad.
You're the first hombre I've run into in quite a while who reads as much as I do. I'd hate to see you die, Frank.
Well, I wouldn't much care for it either.
During the time Frank had spent in Granbury, he had sent wires to his bankers and lawyers, instructing them on what to do in regard to helping Reuben recover financially from the catastrophe that had befallen him. When Reuben found out about it, he had stubbornly insisted that he didn't need Frank's help, just as Frank had expected. It had taken pretty much a whole day to argue him around to seeing things Frank's way. That had been another good reason for the delay. Frank had expected the wedding ceremony to take place in one of the churches in town. When he discovered that it was happening out here in the country, he had ridden on hurriedly without even taking the time to change into his suit. If he could just get to the church before they said the vows.
Stay put, Wolf. I need to get inside before I miss this whole ceremony.
Frank slipped inside, taking off his hat as he did so. The little church was crowded. Folks were packed shoulder to shoulder in every pew, and quite a few were standing up at the rear of the sanctuary. Most of them were dressed in their Sunday best, and Frank felt a little awkward in his range clothes, coated with trail dust. Still, he knew Tyler Beaumont wanted him to be there, dressed up or not.
Well, we finally got here, didn't we, Victoria? What a glorious day it is. In a moment, I'm going to tell you what a sacred and holy institution marriage is. But right now, I just want to enjoy this sight. I don't think we could fit one more person in this church without risking it splitting open like a big melon. Victoria, you look lovely in your white silk and lace gown. Your mama's down there in the front row dabbing at her eyes with a handkerchief. And I even think the judge looks a little misty-eyed. Luke here can't wait to get that tie off and dig into some food. And if Tyler doesn't take a breath soon, he's going to pass out and miss the whole dang party. Well, you two, that's all a part of what today is about. Now, let me get on to the preaching part. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, and have not charity, I am become as sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy...
Frank had attended quite a few weddings, including two of his own. Some of them went by quickly, and some didn't. This one didn't. The minister had a lot to say in his stentorian voice. Finally.
Now, if anyone here has any objections to this union, let him speak now or forever hold his peace.
Nobody ever objected, at least not that Frank had ever heard of. But the possibility was still there, and it was just enough to make people a mite skittish. In this case, when Beaumont glanced over his shoulder, he saw Frank Morgan standing there at the rear of the church by the door. A huge smile appeared on his face. That was enough to make Victoria look in the same direction, and she smiled too when she saw Frank. That made a warm feeling spread through the gunfighter's chest. He nodded solemnly to the young couple, indicating not only his blessing, but a desire that they got on with the ceremony.
Well then, if nobody has any objections, we'll get to it. Do you, Victoria, take this man to have and to hold? Will you love him, comfort him, honor and...
The vows went smoothly, and this part of the ceremony was over almost before Frank knew it. Then the preacher said to Beaumont,
"You can kiss your bride, son."
Golly, Tyler, let her up for air, son!
I'm glad you made it, Frank.
I wouldn't have missed it. Victoria, I never seen a bride look more beautiful.
I'm so glad you're here. Tyler didn't think you were gonna make it.
Sorry, I was a mite late.
Come on, wait till you see all the food. There's even gonna be ice cream.
I think you're more excited about that than marrying me.
Not hardly.
That's a wise answer, Tyler.
Tyler, let's go outside and see to our guests.
Yes, Dave.
I say, you're catching on fast.
Oh, I am so glad you're here. I know Victoria is, too.
I wouldn't have missed it. I got delayed a little, or I would have been here a few days ago.
Well, you got here for the most important part, Morgan.
The men shook hands, a look of understanding passing between them as they did so. They would never be good friends, but they respected each other, and Frank felt a debt of gratitude toward Monfort for the way the judge had given Mercy such a good home and a good life. She deserved all the happiness in the world. They all did, Frank thought. The West was settling down a little at last, so that life out here wasn't the constant struggle for survival that it had once been. Sure, there were still dangers, as all of them knew all too well. But there were moments like this, too. Moments of peace and joy, and a promise for the future.
Morgan! Morgan, it's time, you bastard! Turn and face me! Damn it, Morgan, I'm talking to you! Turn around!
Hello, Chaz. It's been a long time.
Bet you wish it had been longer. Bet you wish you never had to face me.
I don't want to have to kill you. But other than that, I'm glad to see you.
Frank, I'm not armed. Not today.
That's fine. This isn't any of your business.
Well, it's some of mine, and I am armed.
See here, young man. You're disrupting my daughter's wedding, and you're not welcome here. And you know what's good for you? You'll turn around and leave right now.
The wedding's over, ain't it?
Well, yes, but...
Then it shouldn't bother any of you folks when I gun down Morgan.
Blast it, Ferguson. I'm a Texas Ranger. And I'm about to put you under arrest if you don't get out of here.
Can't arrest a man for having a fair fight with another man.
Oh, yes, he can. I'll issue a warrant right here and now on a charge of disturbing the peace.
Nobody's arresting me. Bob!
I hear you, Chaz. And I got them all covered. I wouldn't come any closer, people. If this Winchester goes off, there's no telling who's gonna get hurt.
Bob! Bob Milton, is that you?
It's Cherokee Bob! Cherokee Bob the Outlaw! I'm gonna be famous!
What you're gonna be is in jail, unless you put down that gun and stop acting like an idiot.
No, sir! Chaz and me, we're partners now! And it's my job to see that nobody interferes while he has his finished fight with Morgan there! It's time somebody taught that old-timer he ain't the fastest man with a gun no more!
This all goes back to that shooting contest up in the Panhandle, doesn't it? You just can't stand the idea that somebody might be better with a gun than you.
You're not better. You were just lucky that day. I'm faster, and I'm a better shot, and I'm gonna kill you. You just wait and see.
You go to shooting with all these folks around, somebody's liable to get hurt.
Only one who'll get hurt is you, Morgan, and you'll get dead.
Frank, all my hands are here. If we rush him, he can't get all of us.
No, I don't want anyone else to get hurt. Chaz! Will you give everyone time to get back in the church so they'll be safe?
Hell no! I want everybody to be watching when I kill you!
You got it to do then. Get it over with.
What? No! No, it can't!
No! You killed him!
Cherokee Bob jerked the trigger of the Winchester in his hands. Bob ducked behind the buggy he was using for cover, and Frank's bullets just knocked splinters from the seat. The horse, hitched to the buggy, was spooked by the gunfire and tried to rear. Unable to, it suddenly bolted forward, exposing the young man.
Oh, oh,
Bob dashed toward a nearby tree, levering and firing the rifle from the hip as he ran. Bob made it only a few steps before he ran into a hailstorm of bullets from the guns of Luke Perkins and his tough crew of cowboys.
Anybody hit?
What Frank saw next made him freeze, petrified by horror, the gun in his hand forgotten. Beaumont, Mercy, and the judge were all kneeling around a figure lying motionless on the ground. A figure dressed in a gown that had been beautifully, purely white only moments earlier. A gown that was now blotched with ugly red stains. Stains of blood. Victoria.
Oh, please, God, no!
Victoria!
Judge Monfort's face was ashen as he stood next to his wife, his arm around Mercy's shoulders. She held a crumpled handkerchief to her face and sobbed quietly into it. Next to them stood Tyler Beaumont, and his features might have been carved out of stone for all the emotion they displayed. But his hands, which hung loosely at his sides, trembled slightly, giving evidence of the struggle that was going on inside him.
What do you think, Doc?
I don't know. I think she'll pull through, Judge, but I can't promise that.
What's your best guess?
The bullet passed through her body at an angle. I can't be sure, but I don't think it hit any vital organs. That's almost miraculous. Hell, it is miraculous.
Then she should live.
She lost a lot of blood, and I can't be absolutely certain about any internal damage the bullet might have done. That's why I said I think she'll pull through. I've cleaned the wound and stopped the bleeding as best I can out here. We'll need to get her back to town and into the hospital as soon as possible, though.
When will you know for sure?
If she makes it through the next couple of days, I'll feel a lot better about her chances.
A couple of days?
Frank Morgan stood just outside the open door of the church, listening to the conversation. He didn't want to intrude on Beaumont and the Monfors, even though a part of him wanted to rush in and go to Victoria. But there was nothing he could do for her, and Frank knew it. He took lives, he thought bitterly. He didn't save them. It seemed to him that death was his constant companion, every bit as much so as Wolf or Stormy.
Now, it wasn't your fault, Frank. You tried to get Ferguson to hold off until everybody was clear, and then when he wouldn't, you downed him before he could even get a shot off. I thought I'd seen you hook and draw fast before now, but man alive. I don't know anybody that ever made a faster draw than you did today, Frank. Not Wes Harden, not Ben Thompson, not even Smoke Jensen.
And it didn't do a damn bit of good.
Oh, now, don't say that. Nobody can blame you because that young idiot went crazy and started blazing away like that.
He wouldn't have even been here if it wasn't for Ferguson. And Ferguson wouldn't have been here if it wasn't for me.
That's right.
I'm sorry, Tyler.
Don't. Don't say any more, Frank. There's nothing you can say that will change things. Nothing that will make Victoria get up and be whole and unhurt again.
Now listen here, son. You saw what happened. Frank did his damnedest to stop the whole thing.
I know. And that's the only thing that keeps me from hating him right now.
Well, what about all those times you two fought side by side? Hell, you owe him your own life.
I don't have a life without Victoria. If I lose her... I heard what you said about you being the only reason Ferguson was here. That's the truth.
I know it.
Death follows you around, Frank.
I had the same thought.
And that's why... That's why I don't want to have anything more to do with you. I appreciate everything you've done for me in the past. But from here on out, you and me are done, Frank.
Damn it, boy, you can't just...
He can do whatever he feels like he has to do. Are you sure that's what you want, Tyler?
I'm certain. The doctor says there's a good chance Victoria will recover. But even if she does... I won't let you put her life at risk ever again. Stay away from her. Stay away from me. I'm sorry.
So am I.
No one else had been hurt in the shooting, not even so much as a nick. They had that to be thankful for, Frank Morgan thought, as he sat in a saloon in Weatherford that night and drank coffee. Luke Perkins sat with him. The rancher had a bottle and a glass and would have shared, but Frank had refused the whiskey. He wanted to keep a clear head.
What'll you do now? You gonna stay around here?
You heard what Tyler said. Doesn't want me anywhere near him or his wife.
So you're just gonna ride on?
I don't know what else I can do.
Well, you could take a single tree and wallop that fool youngster on the head a few times. Might knock some sense into that thick skull of his.
Can't blame a man for being worried about his wife.
Oh, hell, I reckon pretty near everybody in Parker County is worried about Miss Victoria tonight. Most of them are probably praying for her, too.
I hope so. She could use a hand from El Señor Dios.
How about you?
I'm not sure the Lord and I are on good speaking terms anymore. He might have given up on me a few dozen dead men ago.
Now you just hush up that sort of talk. You act like you're a sinner in all this instead of the sinned against.
Maybe that's right. Maybe there's some inherent evil in a fast gun hand, no matter how it's used.
Oh, buh, what a load of horse apples that is. You ain't even got an evil bone in your body, Frank Morgan. No, I ain't saying you're perfect. Nobody is. But I've seen evil, and you ain't it.
I appreciate that. And I'd like to think you're right, Luke. Maybe someday Tyler will feel differently about everything. Until then, guess I'll be riding on. He doesn't want me around here. And I don't feel much like being here either.
Well, I reckon I've known you too long to think there's any use in arguing with you once your mind's made up. Just remember you always got friends here. You're always welcome on my ranch. Anything I can do for you, you just let me know.
Actually, there is one thing. I'll write to you once I get where I'm going and let you know how to get a hold of me. That way, if there's anything that comes up you think I ought to know, you can write to me.
Like how Beaumont and Miss Victoria are doing, you mean?
Anything.
Yeah, I'll do that. But ain't you even gonna stick around for a few days just to make sure that gal's gonna be all right?
She'll be all right. She's strong. She has good blood flowing in her veins.
Yeah. Well, that's the truth.
Then Luke sat there, his face solemn, and watched his friend walk out of the saloon and vanish into the night. Frank had traveled southeast at a slow pace for a few days now. His companions, Stormy and Wolf, were not much for conversation, but at least they weren't mad at him. He had no real plan, and the trip so far had taken him to a one-night stop in Granbury, where he took advantage of their hotel on the downtown square across from the ornate Hood County Courthouse. The county was named for Confederate General John Bell Hood. Frank had lived through that war and didn't see much cause to commemorate it, but he couldn't blame people for wanting to honor the dead. And the gallantry exhibited by the outmatched Southerners who had tried to defend their homeland from the aggression of the North was certainly enough to stir the blood. But Hood, to put it bluntly, had been a terrible strategist and had led his troops into a disaster on more than one occasion. Frank didn't think much of generals and thought even less of those who wasted the lives of their men needlessly. After supper in the hotel dining room, one drink in the town saloon, and a fitful night's sleep, Frank was back on the trail that followed the Brazos River south toward Nemo. Maybe this had been his plan all along. Maybe he needed to talk to a friend who didn't know anything about the events at Tyler and Victoria's wedding.
You need a good carpenter's assistant?
Frank! I didn't expect to see you again so soon. How are you?
I'm fine.
Must not have stayed in Weatherford for very long after your friend got married.
No, not long.
What is it? What's wrong?
I'll tell you about it later. You got another hammer?
Yeah. You sure you're up to doing that sort of work? It's only been a little over a week since you got shot, remember?
I'm fine. Nothing helps a man heal up like some good hard work in the fresh air. Anyway, that is just a scratch.
If you say so.
You come a long way in a week, Reuben. All the rubble from the fire is cleared away. You got a good start on your new home.
I'm glad you're here. I'll be ready to start putting up the rafters in a day or so. That's a two-man job at least.
I'm glad to help.
You've already done so much, the money and all. There's no way I could have afforded to do this without your help. I'll pay it all back, you know, every cent.
There's no hurry. I'll figure I'll be around here for a while.
Frank and Reuben worked side by side as late summer turned into early fall and then into Indian summer. The blacksmith shop was finished, and Reuben began working as a smith again, rebuilding the house between jobs of horseshoeing and repairing wagon wheels.
It's nice of your preacher to let us bed down in his barn while we finish your house, Reuben.
Yeah, he's good people. I'm just sorry I couldn't have offered you more, Frank. With all the help you've been, at least I could have given you a better place to sleep.
This is fine. Besides, if it's good enough for Stormy, then it's good enough for me.
I didn't mean to leave you out, Wolf. See, you got another letter from your friend Luke.
Yeah, he's been sending me one every week, updating me on Victoria's condition.
Luke's letters were a mixture of good news and bad. Victoria pulled through, just as the doctor had expected. It had been touch and go for a while, but her strength and her will to live, not to mention her love for Tyler Beaumont, had prevailed in the end. Her recovery had been long and hard, but she was out of danger now. That was the good news. Now for the bad.
No.
What is it, Frank?
She can't walk.
Oh, good Lord.
The doc explained it to Luke. The bullet nicked her backbone on the way through her body. It damaged her spinal cord. So now, she has no use of her legs.
I'm so sorry, Frank. Frank, does the Sawbones think it's permanent?
He doesn't know for certain. It might heal by itself. That's the only hope. There's nothing medicine can do for her now.
I know what you're thinking, Frank, but you just can't blame yourself for this.
All I know is this. Chaz Ferguson's desire to prove that he was a faster gun didn't result in Victoria's death, but it may have condemned her to spending the rest of her life in a wheelchair.
But Frank, you didn't do that. You didn't force Ferguson to envy and hate you. It was that sick kid's decision that made him reach for that gun.
I know, Reuben. Thanks. By the way, the stagecoach dropped something off for you today, Reuben.
What in the world?
Why don't you get a hammer and open them up and have a look?
All right. What have you done now, Frank?
Just open the crates.
I'll just do that.
Reuben got a hammer and pried the top off one of the crates. Inside, wrapped in brown paper, were books. Dozens and dozens of books. Novels, biographies, histories, a fair selection of the classics, including the complete works of Shakespeare. Reuben took them out one by one, unwrapping them, running his fingers over the bindings, opening them to flip almost reverently through the pages. He even lifted some of them to his nose and smelled them.
Lord, there's nothing like a book. Frank, I don't know what to say.
Don't have to say anything. You've done a lot for me, Reuben.
No more than you've done for me.
You're my friend, and I know what losing all those books meant to you. This is a start on replacing them.
Thank you. I'll have to start building some shelves now.
By the end of October, the shelves were up and the books were arranged on them. Only part of the shelves were filled. Reuben had plenty of room to add to his collection. Frank had kept a couple of the books for himself to slip in his saddlebags when he rode on.
Well, that's that.
And he knew that the day had come. The weeks he had spent with Reuben had been good ones and had erased some of the bleakness that had come over him following the tragedy at that country church outside Weatherford. But his restless nature was beginning to assert itself again. By now, drifting was a habit, too ingrained to be ignored. He rode over to Nemo's tiny post office to check the mail and found a letter waiting there for him from Luke Perkins. As Frank came out of the little frame building, he paused by the hitch rail where Stormy was tied and broke the seal on the letter. He unfolded the paper and began to read. He had read only a few words when the sound of hoofbeats made him glance toward the road. He saw a rider coming toward him at a walk.
I got you now, Morgan.
You bastard!
But what happened, Morgan?
I'm not quite sure. This fella was gunning for me. But I don't know why or even who he is.
He must have known you. I heard him shouting your name from clear in the post office.
You have any idea who he is?
Looks a mite familiar. I can't place him, though.
Frank! You all right?
I wasn't hit. Stormy was, though. Easy now. Let me see how bad it is, boy.
Over here, Frank. Looks like it just grazed him.
Some ointment will fix that up pretty well.
What's this? You dropped this letter, Morgan?
I guess in all the commotion I did.
Well, here you go. I don't usually have to deliver these things more than once.
Another letter from Luke?
Yeah, I just started to read it when the bullets started flying.
Is Victoria okay?
This has more to do with Tyler. The Rangers sent him away on a job.
I'll bet leaving his new bride didn't set well with him, especially given her condition.
Luke says here that there's some sort of trouble down in Brown County.
Does he say what kind?
No, some sort of squabble over barbed wire, I suppose.
Will Victoria be staying with her parents while he's away?
Yeah, I'll make sure she has whatever she needs. But by the sound of this letter, Tyler's gonna be away for quite some time.
And you think he's riding into trouble?
Well, you know the kind of hatred barbed wire stirred up in Montana, Wyoming, and other places. It looks like it might be happening here in Texas, too.
And Tyler will be right in the middle of it.
That's what it sounds like.
From what you've said, Tyler's a good ranger, Frank.
He is that, Reuben. I just don't know if he's good enough to tame a whole country.
And you think he might need help?
Oh, he'll need it. I just don't know if he'll accept it from me.
Frank had already begun to feel the urge to move on. Now he had a reason to do so, and a destination. The Drifter would be drifting to Brown County. The miles fell behind Frank easily. Until now, he hadn't realized how much he missed being on the trail. He spent the nights under the stars, snug in his bedroll against the autumn chill, and during the days, crossed small rivers such as the Paluxy and the Leon. Around noon on the third day after leaving Reuben's place, Frank rode into the town of Comanche, with its famous hanging tree on the square next to the courthouse. One of the first settlers in the area had used that big oak for cover as he fought off an attack by a band of warriors from the tribe that had given the town its name. The settler had objected so strenuously when the townspeople wanted to cut down the oak that they had left it there to appease the old pioneer. Since then, more than one bad man had danced at the end of a rope thrown over one of the wide-spreading branches. Frank thought about those things as he rode past the oak and reined Stormy to a halt in front of one of the saloons facing the courthouse. Texas had a long and bloody history, all right, and he was afraid it was due to get bloodier before it got better. This might be the place to get some information.
What can I get you, friend?
Just some coffee, thanks.
Sure thing, mister. You don't want a beer or some whiskey, though?
Nope, just the coffee. Don't know why, but I just had a hankering for some coffee after being on the trail. I hear there's been some sort of ruckus going on next door in Brown County.
Ruckus is putting it mildly, mister. There's been several shooting scrapes, and if it keeps up, somebody's gonna wind up dead. It's a wonder nobody's been killed already over there.
Fighting over barbed wire or something, aren't they? I heard a little bit about it.
Yeah, I tell you, that stuff is the devil's invention, sure enough. Every time it comes into the country, there's blood spilled. Seems like it, anyway.
Yeah, from what I heard, the big ranchers don't really like it.
Well, that ain't quite the way it is down here. This fight is a mite different.
How's that?
It's the big ranchers who brought in the wire. The way they see it, there are too many small spreads starting up, as well as too many farmers moving in. So a year or two back, they just bought up all the land they could get their hands on and started fencing it in. Trouble is, a lot of the little fellas are free rangers, and they don't want to be fenced out, so they start cutting the fences.
Ah, that's different, all right.
Luke's letter had said that Tyler Beaumont had been sent to Brown County because he wasn't known in this part of the state. That could mean only one thing. Beaumont was working undercover. Frank wondered which side he had allied himself with.
Well, friend, thanks for the coffee and the conversation.
Morgan! Hold it right there, mister.
Frank tensed when he heard the stranger's voice. This was usually when the trouble started. When he turned to face the speaker, he was relieved to see a star on his chest.
Don't try anything, Morgan.
I wasn't planning to, Sheriff. I assume you are the sheriff.
Damn right I am. I was at my desk when I saw you ride past the window and recognized you. What are you doing in Comanche County?
Passing through. Stopped for a cup of coffee. No law against that, is there?
There's a law against gunfighters coming in and shooting up the town.
Look at my gun, Sheriff.
Eh, what about it?
It's in the holster. That's where it's been ever since I rode into town, and that's where I intended to stay. Unless somebody forces me to do otherwise.
Is that a threat, mister?
Nope, just a simple statement of the facts.
What's your business in Comanche?
I told you I don't have any. Just riding through on my way somewhere else.
Where?
Brownwood. Not that it's any of your business.
I figured as much. Going over to Brown County to hire out your gun, aren't you? I know all about you, Morgan.
Evidently you don't. I've done a lot of things, Sheriff, but selling my services as a gunman isn't one of them.
Oh, no? Then how come you seem to wind up in every shooting scrape that comes along wherever you go?
Sometimes I just can't help taking cards in the game, especially if there's some cheating going on.
But you don't plan on starting any trouble here in Comanche?
No, Sheriff, I don't. But I can if you got your heart set on it.
There's no call for that. Just ride on, Morgan. I don't want to see your face in these parts again.
Thanks again for the coffee. And the hospitality.
Go see Dukin, gunslinger. He'll pay you your blood money.
Frank didn't turn around, didn't give the sheriff the satisfaction of seeing him respond to the taunt. But he filed the name away in his brain. Somebody called Dugan in Brownwood was hiring gunmen. That might be a good place to start looking for Tyler Beaumont. The sun was sinking behind a big hill just west of the settlement when Frank rode into Brownwood.
McElvey's Palace. Just looks like a saloon to me. Wolf, stay here.
Frank entered McElvey's Palace and quickly took it all in. Bartender moving efficiently between customers, small poker game in the back of the room, two women feigning interest, and an old piano in the corner.
Nope, not a palace at all. Just another saloon.
Hello, handsome. Just right in?
He saw her reaching to take his arm and turned slightly so that she grasped the left one instead of the right. Her eyes narrowed a little, and he knew that she had noticed the move. She had enough experience to recognize a colt man when she saw one, and he had just confirmed her judgment.
That's right.
You must be thirsty, then. You come right on over here with me and have a drink. First one's on the house, you know. That's Mr. McElvey's policy.
No, I didn't know that. It's been a long time since I've been to Brownwood.
Oh, you're not a complete stranger in these parts, then?
Not completely.
My name's Annie. Annie Millam. What's yours?
Frank.
Rusty, bring Frank here a drink.
Sure. What do you have, Frank?
Beer will be fine.
Coming right up. There you go. No charge. I guess Anne explained the house policy.
She did. That hits the spot.
Just passing through Brownwood.
Actually, I'm looking for a job.
Cowboying.
I can make a hand if I have to. But I was really thinking about something a little more lucrative and less boring than following a bunch of cows around.
What did you have in mind?
I was told that a man named Dugan might be hiring.
That made both Annie and Rusty stare at him, and he said it loudly enough so that the men along the bar and at the table heard him too.
What did you say?
That I heard a man named Dugan might be hiring.
Yeah. Hiring killers.
Shut up that kind of talk.
Don't tell me what to do.
Boys, we don't want any trouble here. You know Mr. McElvey doesn't allow any fighting.
You mean McElvey wants to straddle a fence, not make anybody mad. But you know what happens when somebody tries to straddle a barbed wire fence? He's liable to get his balls cut off.
Yes or no?
Dugan is a coward and a snake, and so is anybody who wants to work for him.
I never heard of the man until today.
That don't matter. You get this straight, mister. If Dugan starts bringing in hired guns, the Pecan Bayou will be running red with blood before long.
That's mighty fine talk.
It's more than talk. It's a promise. And if you don't believe it...
Annie, you better move.
I was just thinking the same thing.
The man facing Frank stood there with his hand clawed over the butt of an old Remington single-action revolver, which would have to be cocked before it could be fired.
You don't want to do this.
The hell I don't! It's time somebody sent a message to Dugan and Wilcox and all the others like them. They can't run roughshod over the whole county anymore. It's a new day!
Frank didn't wait, as he sometimes did, for the other man to get his gun out of its holster. He went ahead and drew right away, giving himself as much time as possible to place his shot where he wanted it. The peacemaker roared, and the slug ripped through the man's upper right arm to the outside of the bone.
Damn! Ah! You son of a bitch!
Well, looks to me like you ought to be thanking him instead of cussing him, Rawlins. His gun was out fast enough he had time to put four pills in your belly if he wanted to, instead of just creasing your arm.
Go find a sawbones, get that cleaned and patched up. It ought to heal just fine, and you shouldn't have any trouble using it in the future. Just don't use it to draw on me again. I'll kill you next time.
Oh, God damn it. You'll pay for this, you son of a bitch. Oh, damn.
Bring your drink over here and join us, stranger. Ed McDonald.
Nice to meet you.
Let me introduce the rest of my business associates. Pitch Carey, Dave Osmond, Styles Warren. We all ride for Earl Dugan.
Reckon you can tell me then if he's hiring.
I reckon the boss is always in the market for a good man. More so lately, when a fella can handle a gun like you just did.
Who was that I had to shoot?
Al Rawlins. Got a small spread southeast of town. They run little greasy sack outfits that don't amount to much. They probably don't have more than a few dozen cows apiece.
Sounds to me like there's some trouble in these parts.
You could say that. Rawlings and the men like him are getting too damn big for their britches.
The saloon girl who had been watching the game still stood there by the table. She was older, probably in her 30s, with a doughy face and short, tightly curled brown hair that was starting to go gray.
Oh, they're not so bad, Pitch. They just don't want to be squeezed out. You can't blame them for that.
I can damn sure blame them for cutting fences, though, and for taking pot shots at us when we try to fix what they've torn up.
You don't know they're the ones doing the shooting.
Who else could it be, Midge?
Well, I don't know, but I believe in giving folks the benefit of the doubt.
Around here, that'll get you killed.
You haven't forgotten about me, have you, Frank?
Now, how could I do that?
Rusty says to tell you thanks for not shooting up the place. If you'd shot Al Rawlins in the body, though, the bullet might not have gone all the way through. Now there's a hole in the back wall Rusty has to patch.
Rawlins was on the prod, but I didn't think he deserved killing. Sorry about the bullet hole.
Oh, don't worry about it. I think Rusty was halfway joking anyway. It could have been a lot worse. Speaking of which...
Frank glanced in the direction of the batwing doors. A couple of men in town suits pushed through and came into the saloon. They carried shotguns and looked around quickly, their gazes coming to rest on the table where Frank sat with the cowboys from Earl Dugan's ranch.
I assume this would be the local law coming toward us.
And you would be right.
I got a report of a gun going off in here, McDonald. What happened? Which of you /D-boys fired that shot?
It wasn't any of us, Marshal. It was this fella here. Come to think of it, I don't believe I ever got your name, mister.
It's Morgan. Frank Morgan.
Lord have mercy. I read books about this fella, but I figured he was dead by now.
He looks plenty alive to me. I don't care for gunslingers in my town, Morgan. What were you doing, showing off?
Hey, you could call it that, Marshal. Al Rawlins got his back up and drew on Morgan here. Morgan could have killed him without any trouble, but he just creased his arm instead. It was mighty good shooting, if you ask me. And Morgan did Rawlins a favor.
Is that so? That the way it happened, Morgan?
You didn't see Rawlins outside?
No. A citizen reported the shot.
Go check with your local doctors. I told Rawlins he ought to get the wound cleaned and bandaged. Of course, I don't know if he took my advice or not.
You're a mighty cool customer, aren't you?
I just didn't think there was any law against defending myself.
You'll all swear that Rawlins drew first?
Yes, sir, Marshal.
Absolutely.
That's the way it happened.
So will I, Marshal. The girls and I saw the whole thing.
That's right, Marshal.
Looks like we're not needed here. Come on, Skeet.
Your local law isn't very friendly.
Marshal Keever's not so bad, but his deputy, Skeet Harlan's loco. He handles most of the gun work. When there's some to be done.
And I'd wager he enjoys it.
He seems to.
Which side are they on?
What do you mean by that?
I mean, in this war that seems to be brewing between your boss and the other big ranchers and the small outfits, which side is the marshal on?
Keever says he's neutral. just like Ace McElvey and Newton over at the hardware store, and the Covert brothers, and all the other businessmen in Brownwood. I reckon they think they can't afford to take sides. When push comes to shove, though, I imagine they'll back Mr. Dugan and his friends. Storekeepers always know who's got the most money to spend.
That's true. Now, getting back to what brought me here, I reckon I ought to take a ride out to this Slash D ranch of yours and talk to Dugan himself about a job.
That's what you'll have to do. I ramrod the crew, but Mr. Dugan does all the hiring and firing. We'll be riding that way in a while. You're welcome to trail along with us if you want to.
Much obliged. I reckon I'll do just that.
Good. Now, let's get back to the game. The cards have probably gotten cold just when I was starting to win a few hands.
Deal you in, Morgan?
I'll just watch, if you boys don't mind.
How about another beer, Frank?
That sounds good, Annie.
Annie seemed like a nice young woman, and Frank figured she would have been amenable to going upstairs with him if he had wanted to. But even though more than a year had passed since Dixie was murdered, those fires were still banked within him. A pleasant hour or so passed while the cowboys played cards. Their luck ebbed and flowed. Ed McDonald probably won the most, Frank judged, but everybody came out close enough to even that they were all happy when the game finally broke up.
Guess we better be getting back to the ranch.
Come here, Midge. Give a fella a goodbye kiss.
Oh! Where the hell's the bastard who shot my brother?
She was an impressive specimen of womanhood, even at first glance. Even though she was tall and broad-shouldered, there was nothing mannish about her. The lush curves of her body saw to that. Fiery red hair fell around her shoulders and tumbled down her back. She wore a gray wool shirt, a brown flat-crowned Stetson hung on her back, held there by the chin strap around her neck. A black bandana was also tied around her neck. It was a pretty odd getup for a woman, but the most unusual thing of all was the gun belt strapped around her waist. The butt of a Colt jutted up from the holster attached to the belt.
You must be the one.
Take it easy, Miss Stratton. If Al told you the truth about what happened, you'd already know he could have been hurt a lot worse. Matter of fact, he could have been killed without too much trouble on Morgan's part.
Morgan?
That's right. This here's Frank Morgan, the gunfighter.
So you picked a fight with my brother, knowing that you had him outmatched.
That isn't the way it was.
No? Then tell me how it really was, Mr. Frank Morgan.
All right, I will. I came in here not looking for any trouble, and your brother braced me and insulted me just because I mentioned Earl Dugan's name. Then he went for his gun. I didn't have any choice but to draw mine, but I tried not to hurt him too bad, just like Ed here said. And that's the way it was.
Al didn't say anything about reaching for his gun first.
There you go.
Are you calling him a liar?
Just saying that he didn't tell you the whole story. Take that for what you will, ma'am.
Don't ma'am me. I'm not your little Southern belle.
I reckon I can see that.
Stay off our range. If I catch you out there, I'll shoot you on sight. You understand, Morgan?
I don't know that it's legal to shoot a man just because he rides across your place.
Just remember what I said.
I say she don't like you even a little bit, Frank.
That's for certain, Frank.
I got that impression. Who was she anyway, besides Al Rollins' sister?
Callie Stratton. She's older than Rollins and a widow woman. Moved back into his place when her husband died. He was a tin-horn gambler up in Dallas. The way I heard it, somebody didn't care for the way he dealt the cards one night, off the bottom of the deck, and ventilated him.
She talked like the ranch was as much hers as her brother's.
I reckon that's pretty much the way she feels about it. She's the sort of woman who barges in and takes over, if you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. Luckily, I haven't met that many of them.
Amen to that.
After everyone was mounted up, Ed McDonald led the way out of town, heading south. The sun had set, and the stars were out overhead, a sparkling canopy against the black sky. The air had grown cool with the setting of the sun.
I reckon our cook'll have some grub heated up for us when we get there. And you'll be welcome to join us, Frank.
I'm obliged. Didn't get any supper back there in Brownwood.
Mr. Dugan never turns a man away hungry.
I guess Rawlin's spread must lie east of the Slash D.
Due east. Of course, it's pretty small, like I said. We only share a few miles of border with it. Below that is Thad Wilcox Flying W.
Wilcox is another of the big ranchers?
That's right. The Slash D is probably the biggest spread in the county. But Wilcox's place is almost as big. North of Rawlins is the Horseshoe, another good-sized ranch that belongs to a man named Calhoun. It loops around east of Rawlins, too.
Wait a minute. Rawlins has Dugan to the west, Wilcox to the south, and Calhoun to the north and east? Have all those spreads put up fences?
Damn right. Otherwise, Rawlins would be running his cows on land that doesn't belong to him.
But how does he get them out when it comes time to take them to the market?
I don't rightly know. It hasn't come up so far since Jim Calhoun just finished fencing his spread this past summer. But it's Rawlins' problem, not ours. He's got no legal right to cut the fences, and he sure as hell got no right to shoot at punchers from the other spreads.
Do you know he has?
I've had more than one bullet sing past my ears while I was riding the east line. The shots come from Rawlings' range.
But you didn't actually see him?
No. Whoever was burning powder was behind some trees on a hill, and he took off when I loosed a few rounds back at him. But it was Rawlings, all right. Or one of those hard cases of work for him.
Yet you were all in the palace tonight. Getting along all right from the looks of it.
Well, I couldn't prove it was Rawlings.
Let me guess. And McElvey's got the coldest beer in town.
In its own way, that made perfect sense to Frank. For the most part, range disputes stayed out on the range. Men who might slap leather if they ran into each other elsewhere would ignore each other in a saloon. Of course, sometimes the bad feelings boiled to the surface anyway, no matter what the surroundings, especially when folks had been drinking. Nor could he blame Al Rawlings for resenting the big ranchers and the men who rode for them. From the sound of it, Rawlings was penned in, surrounded by barbed wire so that he couldn't get his stock to market without cutting one of the fences. That just wasn't right. But until Frank located Tyler Beaumont and talked to the young ranger, there wasn't anything he could do about it. He just hoped Beaumont had some sort of plan, and that he wouldn't be so stiff-necked and stubborn that he wouldn't accept a little help.
What is it, Ed?
I saw something down yonder in the trees. A light. Like somebody struck a match.
What's wrong with that?
Right over there is where the Slash defense starts. There shouldn't be anybody poking around it.
Unless they plan on cutting it. Come on, let's ride down on them, whoever it is.
Hold on. Maybe they got a good reason for being there. If we go galloping up and start shooting, somebody'll get hurt.
Damn right.
Let's get down and take a look-see on foot. Quiet-like. This isn't your fight, Morgan. You don't ride for the Slash D. At least not yet. Why don't you stay here and hold the horses for us?
I know you're just trying to do the right thing, Ed. But I'm not the kind to hang back and hold the horses. I'll trail along with you boys, if that's all right. We can tie the horses to those little trees.
It's your decision to make. Take off your spurs, boys. We don't want to announce that we're coming. These trees run along a creek. The fence is just on the other side of them.
Frank could make out the fence post now, jutting up from the ground at fairly regular intervals on the far side of the trees. He couldn't see the barbed wire itself yet. He hadn't seen any lights down there either. Maybe McDonald had been mistaken.
They're here, all right. Let's be careful, boys.
Voices came faintly on the night air. Frank and the Slash D men reached the trees and cat-footed between them. The creek was narrow enough to step across, with shallow banks on each side. A pair of dark shapes stood near one of the fence posts. Frank knew by their broad-brimmed hats that they were cowboys. A faint red glow marked the end of the cigarette one of the men was smoking.
We better get at it.
Yeah.
Whatever the two men had planned, neither of them made a move to carry it out. They were stalling, and Frank knew it. It seemed that they were unsure if they wanted to go through with the chore that had brought them out here in the night. Once they cut that fence, and there was no other logical reason for them to be here, they would be lawbreakers, no two ways about it.
Damn it! It ain't right what they're doing. And I ain't gonna worry about it no more. I'm cutting that damn barbed wire.
Hold it! You cut that fence and I'll ventilate you, mister.
Slash D?
That's right. We're Slash D riders, and that slash defense you're fixing to cut. We'd be within our rights to burn down both of you right here and now. Instead, though, I want you to drop those fence cutters and your guns, and we'll take you into town and turn you over to the law.
Go to hell, McDonald.
Kane? Chris Kane, is that you?
That's right. And if you're gonna shoot, you might as well get it over with, because I ain't going anywhere with you. I'll drop these cutters all right, but only to go for my gun.
Don't do it, kid. There's four of us and only two of you.
I don't care. You've pushed us too far. I ain't backing down.
With that, he opened his hand and let the fence cutters drop. To Frank, they seemed to fall slowly, floating toward the ground, as Kane twisted toward the Slash D men and reached down for the butt of the gun on his hip. That was when the trees behind Frank and the men with him erupted with flame and lead.
It's an ambush! Hit the dirt!
They're in the trees behind us!
Everybody stay down!
We need cover!
There is none! Just hug the ground!
Oh!
They got us in the crossfire!
No, they don't. The two fence cutters ran. Return your fire into those trees. Just aim above the muzzle flashes.
The gunfire from the shadows seemed to be tapering off. Maybe the bushwhackers were losing heart since their intended victims were putting up a good fight.
Don't anybody move yet. Might be a trap.
They're running. Let's get them.
Stay down. Give it another couple of minutes.
You heard the man. Stay on your bellies.
The next few minutes seemed an eternity for Frank and the Slash D Riders.
I reckon it's all right now. Who's hit?
Sound off.
I'm all right, Ed.
Me too. A bullet knocked a chunk of meat out of my leg, but I can stand on it.
What about Dave? Dave! Where the hell are you? Damn.
Oh, man. There's a lot of blood.
Let me get a closer look.
What do you think, Morgan?
I think he'll be all right. The wound's messy, and it may have busted his collarbone. But I reckon with the doctor's care, he'll recover.
We'll take him to the ranch house. It's closer. Warren. You head back to Brownwood right now and fetch Doc Yannis. Bring him straight to Slash D.
What if he doesn't want to come?
Then make him, damn it! I reckon he'll come along without any trouble, though. Him and the old man are friends.
I'll go with Warren and bring the horses back down here. Pitch doesn't need to walk on that wounded leg any more than he has to.
I'm all right, I tell you.
Stay here with me and Dave. Frank, I'm obliged for your help.
I'll be back in a minute.
Frank and Warren hurried through the trees toward the trail where they had left their horses. Frank worried a little that the bushwhackers might have freed their mounts and hazed them off. To his surprise, Frank found that the gunmen hadn't taken the time to do that. Stormy and the other horses were right where Frank and the Slash D Cowboys had left them. It took only a few minutes to untie the horses and lead them down to the creek.
Let me help you, Pitch.
I can do it. Ugh. Lift Dave up here in front of me. I'll hold him on. Nothing wrong with my arms.
Good idea, Pitch.
Before the rest of them left for the Slash D, Frank took a quick look along the fence line where the two wire cutters had been. There was no sign of them now, almost no indication that they had ever been there. But Frank's keen eyes spotted a dark splotch in the grass, and when he bent over and touched it, he felt a sticky wetness on his fingertips. He rubbed his fingers together, recognizing the all too familiar texture.
You coming, Frank?
Yeah.
Frank didn't mention what he had found by the barbed wire fence. Blood had splashed on the grass over there. One of the fence cutters had been wounded, probably in that first volley, and from the looks of it, he had been hit pretty bad.